Jimmy, you're the only person I know that has memorabilia of them from being on TV 20 years ago.
Right on my desk. I just showed you guys. I'll post it on Instagram.
Hold it up again.
I'll post it on Instagram. We did like this Christmas thing in the Midtown Manhattan, and the people at HGTV wanted us all to be there to sign autographs. So it was everybody that was on HGTV that in that lineup at that particular moment in time. This might have been Christmas 2006. And this was our card that they printed, me and Joan. And we signed about five of these throughout the whole entire day. And I have a stack.
Sounds that's exhausting.
Like, I have a stack that's like this thick. We were right in Herald Square, right across from Macy's. I don't know. It was this big HGTV promotion. And there were other people that had more viewers getting lots of more autographs than me and Joan. I haven't thought about that day since that day. That was funny. Did I ever tell you guys, me and John were invited to a Hollywood party when we were doing our show, Trash to Cash. It was before this one, so we were somewhat more recognizable to three people. Anyway, the first show we did, we went to a party, and there was all these like Fox and FX like celebrities there. I remember Zach Galifianakis was there, and the guy who did 24. There was a million people interviewing him, Keith Sutherland. And we had to walk the red carpet, and our PR person's like, you guys go. And in front of us was like a bunch of young, sexy people that were on some new hit show on FX. And the cameras were going bananas. And me and John walked out, and the PR person goes, Jimmy and John, they're going to be on a new show called Trash to Cash. And one guy lifted his camera and went, click, put his camera down. That is absolutely no lie. John will tell you the same story. One guy lifted his camera. He didn't even look through it. He just kind of held it to his chest and pushed the button.
Just in case. I got to take this photo just in case.
Yeah. And I remember Zach Galifianakis was either right before us or right after us. And he had just had his talk show and everybody was starting to figure out who he was. And he got a few more clicks than us.
Anyway. That's hilarious.
Well, I'm still worried about... So you were counting clicks even before.
Yeah. That was the summer of 2003. That was 21 years ago.
Wow.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, what have you guys been up to? What you been doing?
I just gave you guys a full dissertation on how to speed up your CNC machine.
You should share that because it was
we don't have to go into
information
deeply,
to me.
But I've been CNCing a sign. I'm making a sign for Eaton Electric. And it's going to be at the Consumer Electronics Show in January, but it has to be done this week because it's got to go to shipping. It's got to go. It's a real complicated mess. This is how far out things are planned. So it has to be done and shipped out at the end of the week for the Consumer Electronics Show in the early January.
Wow.
And the graphic I got from the company is a millions of words, which is all the words that they do. It's basically if you had to do a paragraph of what you were about, that's what the paragraph is. And the paragraph is superimposed behind the graphic. The graphic is on top of it. So I had a CNC through plexiglass up to the front so that when you shine light behind it, this was all right. We conceived of this idea together, me and the team over there, so that when there's light behind it, the front looks perfectly clean, but the light will shine through the words. And two things, my CNC was taken forever because my ramp values were all at default, which is too slow. So a cut was taking me, I broke it up into five cuts, and each cut was taking 5-7 hours each, maybe more. And so when I finally called ShopBot, Brian at ShopBot said, this is what you need to do. So he sent me a little video, changed the ramp values, and suddenly what would have been another 15 hours of cutting turned into about five or six. So I was actually able to be done by the end of the day instead of sitting at the computer until 7 in the morning. So that was good. I learned about ramp values. But the bigger concern the whole time was I had surfaced my CNC. So it was perfectly surfaced. So that when you cut thin stuff, it's always important to make sure you surface your CNC, because even like a grain of sawdust or a granule of cut plexiglass could hold your sign up. And in that one spot, my CNC cutter would have poked through the front, because I'm cutting through it's 1/4 inch thick, and I'm cutting through 3/4 of that. And in my face of my letter that you can see the light through is like 20/1000 thick. So I was super nervous that I was going to go through this whole entire cut at the end of 20 hours and then see all the cuts at the very top of the cut, which would have been the end, like vaguely paper thin, like thin as like an onion skin, and then it wouldn't have been usable because then the light would have been much more intense up there. Turns out I was smart to surface my CNC before I started because it was absolutely perfect. And then the plexiglass has a little wallop in it just from like leaning on a wall or wherever it came from the storage unit, the warehouse. So to get rid of that, I could have turned on my vacuum table, but my vacuum table would have been on for hours and my electric bill would have been $2,000 for the window of time. And it's so noisy. It's like listening to an airplane engine the whole time. So I ended up spray gluing the whole entire sheet down to the CNC table. And that worked. I just kept making sure that every time I would keep testing around it. You know, when you're CNCing and you see like the cutter push the material down and you go over and you're like, oh no. And it's like puckled up and puckered up. Because the material like in the middle is like, has like a belly that faces up. So all is said and done. The sign is not done, but the cut is done and the cut came out really good. So 25 hours of biting my nails. Because I could have started again, but I would have run out of time. I had just enough material to do a second one. Yeah, but thank God I don't have to. So now the next few steps today, the client's here, so I'm going to show the client. We're going to discuss some of the options going forward and then experiment with some LEDs. So that's my day today. And then I made a wooden chair out of a pallet, which I did a reel of. That's part of the Neil Pask Scrapwood Challenge video. What we were going to try and synchronize our release. And he needed another week. So I was going to be ready next week. Now I'm going to be ready this week. So if today is Friday, the video should be out tomorrow, I think. That's a story.
Cool. Yeah. Yeah. So. I saw like a piece of that. I don't know that I saw the whole reel, but I saw you cutting the pallet up to make the chair.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did it turn out like you wanted it to?
Or? Yeah, it did. It did. Some of my dimensions were a little off, but to the untrained eye, it looks just like a chair. And I made some compromises because I thought I needed the time. But I wanted to make a classic schoolhouse, wooden schoolhouse chair. And I did. And I'm happy with the way it looks. Came out good.
Awesome. That's cool. David, what have you been up to?
So, you know the Radiohead song, Just? There's a line in there where he says, you do it to yourself. That line repeats in my head all the time. Because any problems that I have in life, I do it to myself. So this is the time of the year where it's very beneficial to accept all the sponsorships because it's going to be real slow January, February, March. And so there's 4 videos due this month. There's going to be 4 videos due next month. And I did this last year and the year before. And it's working nonstop. So I do it to myself. I know that it's coming, and yet it's still a little stressful. And so I've been trying to come up with, like, I want to do something creative, but I want to make a couple of videos that don't take 2 weeks to make. And so I thought, well, this week I'm going to make a bandsaw box. Maybe I'll sell some more books, promote the book, and I'll try to come up with a creative way to make a bandsaw box. So we started making one. And I wanted to make it so the body of the bandsaw box was kind of like an eyeball shape, but not meant to be an eyeball. And I thought, I've never seen a bandsaw box with like actual legs. So I want to turn it into this sculptural art piece. So it actually sits like 30 inches high, has really long legs, kind of has this like alien figure look to it. And so, but I didn't have a complete plan. So we made the body. And then I'm going through the closet looking for wood to make the legs. And then I came across this Buckeye Burl. It's not really, it's a cookie, but it's not cookie shaped because it's all crazy weird shaped. And it almost had this like, there's a portion missing out of it that was almost the shape of the bandsaw box that I made. I'm like, whoa, this is just like, this is too coincidental. We have to use this piece. So scrap the leg thing, and I'm going to have this burl wrap around and kind of form into this bandsaw box, and then it hangs on the wall. And so I don't have it in the shop with me because there's epoxy on part of it that's curing. But it was really fun to make something that was kind of simple and easy that I've done a million times before, but then found a new way to make it look super cool and artsy and have nature involved. So, yeah, that's what I'm working on is a, it's going to be very polarizing. Some people are going to look at this thing like, that is the ugliest thing I've ever seen. And I think some people are going to look at it and be like, what the heck? That is awesome. And right now I'm in the, what the heck? That is awesome camp. And, but I, as a lot of things that I make, sometimes I'll have a different opinion down the road. So we'll see where it ends up. If it hangs on the wall in my house and stays there, that means I like it. If it goes to the other house or if I give it away, that means I didn't like it. But yeah, I think I got a new take on a bandsaw box.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Speaking of the burl thing, my sister has become a woodworker in the last couple of years, and she just loves it. And so she has a bunch, like I've taken a bunch of my tools that I don't really use anymore and I leave them over there, and she's using them and stuff, which is awesome. But the other day she started working on this, she started power carving, and she started working on this big cookie burl chunk like you're talking about. That's what made it come to mind. And it's maple, and so she started, and it's this big, it's like, I don't know, 2 or 3 feet across, you know, and it's kind of oval shape. And so she starts digging into it, trying to, I can't read that. Jimmy had put up a, your connection's too bad, I can't read it. But he's leaving, so he'll be back. So, anyway. She started digging at this thing with the power carver and took off all of the nasty, like, top layer, and then realized that underneath that there's like, bird's eye stuff, and there's this real burl, twisty, it's just like gorgeous, and it's all changes across the entire thing. So she ended up digging into it with the power carver and adding, like, it almost looks like the final result looks like you took a piece of wood and then turned it into fabric, but it still looks like wood, and then you bunched the fabric up, so it has these
okay,
these like ripples and curves to it that look like fabric, but it's wood, and it's gorgeous. And she did an amazing job of getting it smooth. And
it sounds amazing. You know,
like, yeah, it's awesome. And so, and then it has some cracks down in the deep center part of it. And so she's filling those with epoxy to get them flat and everything. And then she, I'm bragging on my sister a little bit. She sent me this picture of this chunk of walnut she had that was about, I don't know, 7 or 8 inches, kind of square-ish, you know, but not a cube. It's like longer in one direction. And so she was like, I'm going to try to see if I can sculpt this thing down into something. And she sent a picture of it in a vise, like just the chunk. And then she had an angle grinder with like one of the wheels on it. And then she sent another picture of it as a ball.
A ball?
And she's, yeah.
Oh,
she,
wow.
She sculpted the entire thing down to not a perfect sphere, but a ball in a vise. Oh, and the whole time I was like, how did you get that to stay in place? And she learned how to use the tool on the right angles to keep it from trying to shoot itself out of the vise all the time. And then we went to lunch the other day and she brought this thing, and it's like a walnut ball egg thing. But it goes in this big plate of this smooth, and I don't know. She's doing awesome.
That's cool.
So a couple of years ago, I was driving down the road and there was a bunch of like a tree that was cut up. Couldn't tell what it was, but it was cut up into like 2 foot, 3 foot sections. And I grabbed a couple of those and threw it in the truck, and I had video footage of it. And fast forward a couple of years later, this is what I made the bandsaw box out of. So I took this tree stump looking thing, no idea what kind of wood. It was just like, it's probably going to be ugly. We're just going to use it. Maybe it's got some cool bug stuff in there. So we jointed a flat surface on the bottom of it so I could then run it through the big bandsaw and start cutting off sides. And then we could run it through the planer and get parallel and right angles and all that. And it just, what came out of it was this amazingly beautiful piece of hickory. I thought it was just going to be some ugly crap wood with no character. But it revealed this unbelievable piece of hickory. And I think I have a couple more, but I seem to collect these pieces of wood and they're just in a shed. Some of them are outside in the weather. And there's no bark on there, and they're all weathered and gray. So I have absolutely no idea what kind of wood they are. I think they're just totally not identifiable in their current position. So, but I collect these things, think I'm going to make a sculpture out of them. And maybe someday I will, and get the power carver out and do some stuff.
Mm. Yeah.
Is any wood really ugly? Do you ever cut into wood and like say, that's ugly?
Well, not... I sometimes I'll think it's ugly, and it's only because it's not what I expected.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Right.
And then you give it some time, and you know, there's... When you collect these pieces of wood, there could be some spalting or some rotten stuff in there. And if you can... I made one sculpture. It's kind of like a teardrop shape that I cut into it, and it just had all this rotten, really soft wood in there. I'm like, well, what can I do with that? And just poured epoxy on there and painted it, and it came out really cool. So I thought it was ugly at one time, and then I used that ugliness to emphasize what it is. And but sometimes you get a piece of wood, it just doesn't have any character. Like there are trees around here, I can't think of
aspen,
like maybe like a sycamore tree, just has no character, nothing, there's nothing special about it. You don't find this type of wood in stores because nobody wants it.
So I bought a bunch of aspen for a project several years ago. The worst wood of all woods. Absolutely terrible, horrible. Don't ever buy aspen. If you see an aspen tree, just run, don't touch it, don't try anything with it. It's so boring. It's like, it's the color of the back side of this notepad. It's just boring, yellow, white, has no grain, has no character. It's fuzzy. You try to cut it and all the edges just like fuzz, and you can't sand it. Awful. So yes, there is ugly wood, and I just have a vendetta against aspen.
I think I remember this. You saying you tried to sand it, and it just wouldn't sand.
Yeah.
Exotic just, woods.
The more you sand it, the more it just like dandelion fluffs around. It's so awful. Really, really terrible. What was I going to say? Oh, you sent a picture of a cookie table, Jimmy.
Yeah,
what is
that's
that?
You just reminded me when you were talking about cutting into it and getting all spunky inside.
Oh,
yeah. One of the first bandsaw cuts that I made, you guys are both talking about wood and cookies, reminded me. One of the... The first couple of sawmill cuts I made were these cookies. And so I brought it back here, and I soaked the top with epoxy, like 4 or 5 coats. It's puckering a little bit. It's not quite perfectly flat. And I didn't want it to be shiny gloss, because you see that all the time in these like rented cabins. It's like a cookie, but it's like super glossy. Or you see it on the wall with a clock on it. So I tried to keep this, even though the epoxy was really just to close up the grain. And it's getting a little bit of a surface on it. So now I'm going to blacksmith up a set of legs for it. That's my idea.
Nice.
So it'll be the first thing I make off of the sawmill.
This is the thing my sister...
Oh, my goodness. I see the fabric, what you're talking about now. Yeah, that's really cool.
And you can't see all of the detail in the wood from this angle just because of the reflection, but there's tons of little beautiful stuff in there.
Yeah, that's cool.
That's inspiring. So my grandparents had this cookie hanging on the wall, and I think there was a like a clock in the middle of it.
Yeah.
And I feel like this was a common thing, but I don't know if it was a common thing. But super glossy cookie hanging on the wall with a clock. Is that a?
That's like a common.
Okay.
Rustic looking thing. You see this from the 80s, I think.
Yeah. And I kind of used that as inspiration. So the Buckeye Burl part, super glossy and shiny because it's covered with epoxy. And then the hickory part, I went the opposite and I'm using my matte dull finish on there. So there's this contrast between the funky wood and then the beautiful hickory wood where they'll have one shiny, funky one's wood. Matte.
Nice.
Funky wood.
Funky wood.
Well, let's see. So, what have I been working on? I made a clamp last week, which sounds boring, and it probably is, but it was cool. So, I did... The last video I put out was making the paper roller thing. So, you know, I talked about it last time. rolls up all these really long pieces of paper, and it was just figuring out how to do this in a way that is more efficient, that preserves the roll of the paper, makes it easy to ship, and all that type of stuff. The response to that video has been awesome. Like, it's super encouraging to hear people say, I love watching you solve problems in real time. Because that's kind of like where I'm headed these days, is I just really like to solve problems, whether the problems are something that anybody else has or not. And it's just fun to think out loud, finally, about all of the different branches that you could go down and the decisions you have to make and the things you get to try when trying to get to a solution. And so I did that video a couple weeks ago and then immediately started on the next video, which is a similar, it's a totally different project, but it's a similar process of just, here's the thing I need with what I am capable of and what I have at my disposal. How can I make that thing do? And, you know, laying out the, here's what I actually want it to do. So here are my goals that I need to meet, that kind of thing. And so being in the middle of that and then having this paper roller video do well and people talk about how much they liked seeing that process was a little bit like affirming, like, oh, good. This next one's not going to, I mean, it may not do well, who knows, but it, you know, at least I feel like there are some people who are appreciating what I'm doing. So big thanks to everybody that left those comments, because that is very encouraging. Also, there were tons of, and I asked for feedback on the paper roller at the end of the video. I was like, you know, I'm sure you have ideas, leave them down below. And I've gotten tons and tons of comments around, do this, do this, do this. I've gotten a bunch of emails around that. I've gotten Instagram messages of people like offering advice and ideas and suggestions. And most of them would be an unnecessary amount of extra work to, you know, I'd have to start over to try to see if that would work and what I have is working. But there's some really good stuff in there. So it's really interesting. It's gotten me thinking about crowdsourcing engineering and how we might use that. And I know, at least for me, I like to solve my own problems when it comes to this type of stuff. Like, I don't really
intentionally dedicate a project just to that idea, the crowdsource. Just dedicate,
yeah, I think that might be the way to do it, because I don't like doing research on stuff typically. I don't like looking to see how other people solved it. I just like figuring it out, even if it's not the best way to do it. But yeah, it got me thinking about dedicating a long-term thing where one video is maybe about laying out the problem, laying out the needs for solutions in this problem, and then getting feedback. Now, the hard work of this, I think, would actually be like culling and testing all of the feedback from people. But then you'd end up with this interesting crowdsourced solution to a problem.
Camel.
What?
Did you ever hear the term, a camel is a horse designed by a committee?
Yeah. Yeah. But that's the thing, though. The committee wouldn't get to decide on the final result. They would just get to say their opinions and give feedback. Right. So
and then you pick the good stuff.
You pick the right thing, yeah. So culling that information and those ideas down to like a good solution would probably be tough. But anyway, got me thinking about that. But this past week, was a way long lead up. I have, and I think you guys have the same 360 camera, the X4 by Insta360.
Oh, it's the actual 360, the real global video.
Yeah, the spherical video one. So I've got that, and I've been using that a little bit in the shop. And we had a camera mount on the ceiling right above the workbench, not centered on the workbench, and this was part of the reason that this came up. It was like off to one side. And so I've been trying to use little bits of that and other small cameras in different places just to vary the shots and everything. So because this camera was over top of the workbench and it's on a pole that comes down, it's really inconvenient to put there and take from there because you have to unlatch it at the ceiling. And it also is in that one location. And so I started the video with being like, okay, I want a clamp so that I can take this camera and I can stick it onto any exposed joist in the entire shop, just like, and it's good, and then I can pull it off. No latches, no hooks, no buttons, no anything. And then the first thing I did was show, the simplest way to do that is to take a spring clamp and screw it to a piece of wood, and now you have a way to do this. So I got that out of the way, because I know everybody's going to be like, well, you know, somebody else invented clamps, you know that, right? Anyway, so I got that out of the way, and then the whole video is me prototyping in first in wood, a spring clamp essentially that has the right amount of opening and the right amount of tension and the right opening geometry to be able to just take hold the camera at like your chest level and just push it up onto a joist, and it goes up
like
and grabs
snug,
the joist.
More of a snug clamp.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's the camera's super light, so it doesn't have to hold a lot of weight. It just has to be tight enough for that, and that sounds really easy. Like, you guys are both like nodding your head, and you're like, oh yeah, that's like easy. It's not as easy as you think.
I mean, can imagine.
You could like, I think you could muscle it and make it pretty easy by making it super tight, you know, and then you wouldn't have to worry about it, you know, working as well as if it's just tight enough. But I went down this path of trying to figure out how to get it to where it's flexible, has two arms that are flexible, but then they have like fingers at the tip that will like open and kind of rotate with the thing. And then like, where do you put the spring? How much spring do you need? Where are the pivot points? Like, it ends up being,
geometry.
It's not, and it's trial and error geometry. It's not math. It's not like I didn't figure out fulcrums and, you know, whatever I did a test and realized, oh, it needs to be lower. I'll make it lower next time. And then I did a lower, you know, that kind of thing. But it's cool. It ended up being fully 3D printed in like five parts. It's got steel rods that run through the two arms with a spring that's notched to fit on these two arms.
Is this
arms,
a video
so it's
that
all,
you're doing? Or did you
yeah.
Show, it's you didn't video. Show it off yet.
No, I haven't put it anywhere yet, yeah. And it's not in here. I can't show it to you. But, you know, it's 3D printed, 100% 3D printed. It's got like a 1/4-20 bolt sticking out of the bottom, so I can put my little connector on it and snap it onto the bottom of the camera stand and just like stick it up there. And it totally works. Like, totally works. So, hopefully that, people will find that process.
That reminds me, you're going to laugh. So, 25 years ago when I worked in my mother's basement.
I did that same thing.
I did something similar, but the broom was always falling into the wall and getting lost. This is 30 years ago because I haven't been in my mother's basement since the 90s, since the 80s. Pushing my broom around, I could never find it. So I drilled a screw right into the end of the broom, and then I sharpened what was sticking out. I cut the head off and sharpened what was sticking out, and then I would just plunk the broom into the floor above me. So it was hanging in space, and it was always right there. And it's not practical because you have a sharp spike sticking out of the end of the broom. So when I was done sweeping, I'd go to the corner of the room and just plunk it into the floor above. But that was also, I only had a 7-foot-high ceiling in that room. So I just used the spike on the end of it. It wouldn't be really practical because it eventually would work its way out of, you know, if there was a movement or whatever.
And well, but you used a screw, right? You could throw it up in there and then twist it a few times.
A little
like,
bit, yeah.
It up. That's awesome.
A little bit.
Huh.
So, uh-oh. What do you got, Dave?
Oh, you're muted, David.
I didn't want people hearing me pour my coffee. So this is the X4. And it's got two cameras on there. So there's a seam. Do you have it mounted so that seam doesn't interfere with what's going on the table saw?
Yeah, we have to decide where the seam's going to be usually when you use those cameras.
It's hanging just upside down.
And
just straight upside down, but you know, twisting it will kind of decide where that seam is. But
that seam isn't kind of inconsequential unless you're in a room with a lot of detail. When you start to show, but if you're outside, like in the woods, in the sky, if you're outside, typically the seam is almost unnoticeable. But I realized I shot something inside a room where there was lots of patterns and stuff, and you could easily see. They try to blend them, but it doesn't blend very good. You could see some of it's missing, some of the shots, and that was because I didn't make a conscious decision to make sure the seam wasn't in the action.
Hmm.
But you guys, once you play with the cameras, you just have to figure that out.
Yeah, so I mean, it's, you know, it has the pole attached to this clamp. So once you've got it stuck to the ceiling, you can just twist the camera to get
nice,
whatever angle you want. So the video's not done yet, so I actually haven't seen the final result. But I know just from using it for a day and testing it out, like it works pretty well. So that's what I've been doing, pretty much. I got to thinking about something. We didn't have a topic, but I was thinking about something the other day in regards to music. And we've talked about this type of thing before, I think. But I was telling you guys before we started recording, I'm about to start redoing my office. I'm like designing a new desk, and I got a new keyboard, and I'm trying to redesign. Mm. I'm trying to make the space more conducive to playing music. And so that's been something I've wanted to get back into for, I don't know, like 15 years, and I haven't actually done it on a regular basis. So I'm trying to set up ways to make it easier to do, remove the barriers, the things that get in my way from playing music, right?
And this is my life.
Well, okay, so this kind of started, or this process started, because I've been listening to Atomic Habits, which I know you've listened mm-hmm. to before and you told me about, and I finally got around to doing it. And it's got some really good stuff in there, but one of the simple things that it tries to get across is, like, there's certain things you can do, general things, to make habits more reasonable to do. You make it attractive, you make it simple to get to. What I don't remember what they are, but they're removing things that get in your way, and then making the payoff for those habits positive. Anyway, so it's led me down this, like, okay, I can finally maybe use some of those ideas to set up the office in a way. It gives me a chance to just reset, but also set it up in a way that promotes music to me. And so it got me thinking about the ways that I've tried to do this in the past and why they've failed, and like how I don't stick with, you know, getting back into recording or getting back into guitar. I play keys on a regular basis, but I don't have a way to stick with these things and to keep them going. So it got me thinking about accountability in that context, about things that we want to be, things that we want to do. And at least my tendency is typically to keep those things inside, but I don't want to say them to anybody because I don't want to like commit to wanting them to someone else. It makes it a lot easier to not actually do them. And mm-hmm. accountability well, is all about
better your ideas. That's what I
exactly. Accountability is all about saying to someone, this is the thing I want to do, and I need you as an outside influence to keep me on track, or to check in with me, or to remind me, or whatever. So, you know, the context I'm thinking about all this stuff in is music right now. But it got me wondering about the two of you, and if there is anything like that you've quietly kept inside that you want accountability for from Ooh. Us or from someone else, but you've never said. Now, I know we've talked about, like, things you want to do, things you want to get
better
at.
Yeah, we were going to do accountability buddy when you were going to, like, follow
yeah,
up.
Yeah, that's right. Accountability buddy. I forgot about that.
You were going to make sure I was playing my trumpet. Which I've been quietly practicing a little bit here and there.
Have you?
Yeah, like once a month I play with it.
Awesome.
Yeah. I'm getting a little bit better. In about 30 years from now, I'll be able to do the scales.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, we should still be recording in 30 years, so that sounds good. Put that on the schedule. You don't have to, like, I'm not asking you to expose yourself, but is there anything that, like, you've been, whether it's maker-related or not, that you want to, you don't do, you want to do, you wish, maybe it's not us to hold you accountable, but you wish you had something external to hold you accountable to doing?
Well, I mean, the first thing that comes to my mind is exercising, but I'm pretty good. I slack a little bit. There was a moment in time where I met a friend in Manhattan. He lived in a building with a gym, and we'd meet at his gym for 4 days a week at like 6 a.m. I'd ride my Vespa over to his place. We did that one summer. And that was fun because you wake up and you go, I don't want to work out, but I got to go meet Bobby. So I have to go anyway. So that was a good disciplinary thing. But I'm pretty good at holding my own feet to the fire. I did take a break for those people that are following me on Peloton. I told you guys it's kind of that is my accountability. When I'm like, yeah, I'm Peloton, and then someone goes and looks and like, he hasn't been on Peloton in like 6 weeks. What's he talking about? Because it's public, so that is a little bit of an accountability.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, do you guys work out in any way? And is it being tracked by an app where everybody can go and look? That's I think it's a little bit of why that is that way, because you are, it's like basically Facebook for your exercise routine. There's no reason for it other than just to expose what your routine is. There's no interaction. There's no talking. There's no sharing pictures. It's just hey, I swear I work out. And then now it's like, oh, do you really? Let's go look. Oh, you looks like you've been on the bike once in the last 3 months. Interesting. How's that workout going out for you? So that keeps me accountable. Hmm. And I did take a break because of travel and maker camp and everything else. So now I'm back on. Like I said, I'm back to 3 days a week. And last night I did my one of the 3 days this week. And oof, it's rough. But it's working. I'm doing it. So that's the one thing I think about. And yeah, I guess that and my trumpet. Those are my two most. And Ryan, who lives in my house, Ryan is a very, very accomplished trumpet player, and he's the one who wrote out scales for me and gave me a couple little practice tips and sent me a video to follow. So I've been doing his first lesson, but I have to work on it a little bit harder.
The short answer for me is going to be I can't think of anything that I want to do that I'm afraid to say because I just can't think of anything. But that being said, the video that I just released this morning, it is all about I collect potential. I love the idea of potential. So I collect these random things that might turn into a project someday. Or you talking about getting set up to do music. I love the setup process. Like, I wish I could show it on camera here, but I got this rack of drawers of effects and synths and drum machines, and I'm so proud of this thing that I made to make it so easy to potentially make music. Then once it's done, I may not use it. But I love the idea of potential. And then when I am ready, that's when I'm ready. I don't need somebody else's input, or I don't need a what would you call it, accountability buddy? I wait till I'm ready. So I have a pretty, for a year and a half now, I do this morning routine. It's a walk, and I don't eat until noon, and I do a meditation thing. And I didn't even tell Kelly that I just started this routine. I just did it when I was ready. And then after I started doing it, I'm like, this is the thing that I do now. And I don't know. I maybe I'm hiding from the pressure of having that buddy, but I just wait until I'm ready. And then once I commit, I'm totally committed.
Yeah. And I don't think we have to have that to accomplish anything, having somebody external to you. Because I know, like, me working out, running, trying to be active more in my life, I kind of don't want anybody's help with that. Like, those are things I like to do on my
own. That's your thing.
Like, I get that.
Yeah.
But there are certain things that I think I struggle with doing. Things I would love to play music. I can't find a way to prioritize it for myself. Mm. And so I think the accountability is just to have someone external to help me prioritize. You know, if there's somebody else that's asking me if I prioritized it, I feel like that maybe make it easier for me to prioritize it. Mm-hmm. Now, part of that is, you know, and I think we've talked about, I don't know if we talked about this on the show, but my daughter, who's a teenager, and she's become this incredible, her voice is like ridiculous. It just, she has an incredible voice. She started writing music, and she's really good at it. And so me having all of this music equipment and recording history, and I mean, I have, you know, I don't want to say ability. I have minimal recording ability as far as like being a technician, but I can do it. And having all this at her disposal, like, it would be irresponsible of me to ignore her and to not help her at least, you know, keep track of the stuff that she's writing. And so there's a big motivation there that's external to me. But I think it's more than that. Like, I have a history of writing and recording my own music as well. And I miss that. I miss doing that. But I'm in a totally different place in life than I was when I did those things. So it is hard to prioritize. So I guess that's the difference in what I'm asking is, you know, something that you struggle with accomplishing, not the things that, you know, you've gotten good at, you know.
I can't think of one good example where somebody pushed me and I finally did the thing and I feel better. And Jonathan Ransom kept bugging me. He's a listener. He's a Patreon member. He helps run my Discord. He kept bugging me. He's like, "Do you have your redundant backup set up yet?" And I was like, "No, it's expensive." And then I buy it. And then he's asking, "You have it set up yet?" I'm like, "No, it's still got to do the transfer. It's going to take like 3 days." And like, he kept bugging me. I finally have the backup. I have the backup to the backup in an offsite location now. And I probably would not have that done. It probably wouldn't be done if Jonathan didn't keep bugging me. And bugging's the wrong word, but making sure that, you know, my business is safe in case of disaster. So I want to thank you, Jonathan, for getting me to do that.
Yeah, he's a good dude. He has a reputation on our Discord of convincing people to buy 3D printers. So that's what I thought you were going to say. Yeah. Like there's a GIF that I don't know who made it, but it's on our Discord, and it's like choppy video of the SWAT team breaking into a house and like breaking down doors and, you know, clearing this house, and all the text on screen is like, "Buy a printer, it's like buy a 3D printer," and I'm pretty sure he had something to do with that.
I just sent you guys my first trumpet lesson that Ryan wrote out for me. That's what I've been practicing.
Oh, nice.
My tablature on the bottom.
Yeah, look at that.
Yeah.
Wow, yeah, he does know what he's doing. That's awesome.
Yeah.
That
was from August, and I practiced twice.
Twice?
So now that we talked about it, I'm going to practice more.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's almost time for the Christmas concert, man. You got to, like, practice.
I know.
You
got to get ready for the Christmas party.
So last year, every year we talk about, my family talks about doing a Christmas song together. Everybody plays music or sings or both or whatever. And so we talked about a few years back, like doing me recording most of the instruments when the kids were young, recording almost the instruments and then having them come in and sing as like a chorus. And we were like, this is something we totally are capable of doing. It doesn't have to be good, but it would be a great thing to have every year. Just the progression of some little Christmas song of just all of us doing it. Never done it. It's a great idea. Great, you know, we've never done it. Last year, for the first time, my daughter and I sat down and I played guitar and she sang and I did like some backup vocals and we did Blue Christmas. And it was just like an afternoon's worth of sitting there figuring it out and singing it. And it was awesome. It's like one of my favorite videos of me playing guitar and her singing with it. And so my wife and I were talking the other day about, like, it's November. We always say we're going to do the thing, but we never do the thing. So now I'm trying to figure out like some song that we could get. Because in my house, my wife does not play piano. She sings, but everybody else plays piano. I play guitar. My daughter plays guitar. My son plays euphonium. My other son plays trumpet. My other son plays flute. And like we have a bunch of non-traditional instruments, but not like, you know, rock band instruments. We have like a bunch of those that they're very capable players and we could do some really cool stuff. It's just a matter of like, how do you find enough time around soccer and around school and around all of these things to be able to take something like that, that would be good for everybody. It would be awesome to hear next year and prioritize that. So this book that you've talked about before, Atomic Habits, it's got some really practical situational advice about, like, if you want to do this thing, here are some ways to set yourself up to be able to do it. If you want to stop doing this thing, here are some ways to make it difficult for you to continue a bad habit. So far, at least, it just boils down to making it as easy as possible to get to a thing that you want to be able to do, which is common sense, right? But still having somebody kind of clinically walk you through, like, yes, just if you don't want to watch TV, literally unplug your TV and put it in the closet. Oh yeah, like you can do stuff like that. You can hide things from yourself. You can have other people hide things from you, or you know, hold your phone until you've worked until lunch, mm-hmm. or whatever the thing is. And it's just like a reminder that we get in these like loops of I have to have this thing or I am this way. And go ahead.
If I'm remembering right, I think one of my favorite things from the book was you already have certain habits. Like you brush your teeth every morning. Attach something to that habit, and that can become your new habit. So, you know, like if you want to get into meditation, oh, every day right before or right after I brush my teeth, I do meditation. And then that helps you build upon that habit.
Yeah, he calls that habit stacking.
Habit stacking, yes.
You already do. Yeah, or like he talks a lot about triggers, not triggers, that's not the word he uses, but cues, where like you see the bag of chips and you weren't hungry until you see the bag of chips and that thing reminds you of something that you enjoy, so it makes you feel like you're hungry, so you want some chips. And so he's like, you have these cues that lead you to bad habits often, but you can build cues that lead you to good habits as well. You know, like the night before when you go to bed, you lay out your running clothes and stuff right in next to your bed. So the first thing you see when you get up is the running clothes. You don't have to go work to get them. They remind you that's a thing that you do. And there's another big point in there. And this is part of the music thing for me. There's a point in there about a thing you do versus a thing you are. I think this is really cool. Like, if you spend some time thinking about this on your own, this is really cool. If you look at your habits, good or bad, as a thing you are, there's a very different impulse than if you look at them as a thing that you do. So, if I say I run sometimes, that means. I mean, you're forcing yourself to go for a run sometimes. It's a thing that you have to do because you know you have to do it. Yeah. If you start describing yourself as a runner, the identity around that action changes completely.
Mm-hmm.
You own it. You become it a little bit. Whether it's true or not yet, you become it until it's true. And so he talks a lot about how habits and identity are mixed together a lot. And a lot of it is that just the mentality of this thing that I do that I don't want to do. You know, I smoked. I'm a smoker. When you say you're a smoker, you're owning it. You're buying into the fact that this is a thing that is a part of your life, even if you don't want it to be a part of your life. And so he kind of mentions that in you can voice things to yourself and to other people as a thing that you have done, chop it off, get rid of it, or a thing that you are, add it to your life,
mm-hmm.
you know. And so that's kind of what I want to do about music. It's easy for me to say, I used to play music. You know what I mean?
Right.
I used to be in a band. I used to write. I used to record. Those were actions that have happened in the past. And I think if I have a little taste of, I recorded a thing today, then I can say, I'm a musician again. Like, I'm recording. I have a studio set up. I have, you know, these things that will then further me into doing more of it because that's who I am. I started climbing again recently. You guys feel free to talk because I've been talking for like 25 minutes.
I'm listening.
I started climbing again recently. I climbed in high school a ton. I was a climber in high school. And then I went to college and then I climbed sometimes. I built a climbing wall in my backyard when I was out of college and would climb on occasion. I've had climbing walls in my yards and stuff for many years. But it's not something that I do often. Well, recently, I took the whole family. We went to a climbing gym near here. We had a blast. Everybody loved it. My kids are surprisingly good at climbing. And it was so much fun. And I felt, I went right back into it, just like I was in high school. Like I felt the same endorphin feeling from it, the problem solving that comes with climbing, all that stuff. And after that, I was like, okay, do I want to go climb again? Or do I want to start being a climber? And this is all like wrapped up in this, like the same going through the book at the same time and dealing with all these things.
I'm like,
you know what? I'm kind of old for this to start doing this again, but I'm not too old to start doing this. I'm a climber.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of decided like, okay, I'm going to buy some new shoes. I'm going to buy some climbing shoes. And then the other day I bought climbing pants because the pants I had on were not stretchy enough. And then my son and I went climbing again, just the two of us. And it was not because I needed a family outing. It was not because I needed the exercise. It was like, I really enjoyed that. He really enjoyed that. So we're going to go become climbers. We're going to go climbing again. So all that to say, I think we can decide these things about ourselves and use those decisions to help drive some behavior. And I'm trying to do that specifically with recording music, writing music, and climbing right now. And I'm going to stop talking. Do you have anything to add to that?
I do. I think the identity part is so important to me. Like, everybody that listens to this podcast is some sort of maker, a woodworker, a metalworker, but there's some sort of maker, and that identity means something. And there's so much potential. Like, you're about to be a musician, or you are a musician, and your family you have a whole orchestra. The potential of making music is exciting. I feel so bad for people who don't have an identity tied to creating something. And I shouldn't feel bad, but I can't imagine a life where I don't have the potential of making something. There's people that just, they go to their job, they go home, they watch TV, rinse and repeat. I can't even imagine not having that identity of being a maker and not having the potential of creating something.
Even if it's difficult to do, even if it's difficult to accomplish and fit into your life. Yeah, I'm with you. Mm. Just not like wanting that. Yeah.
Mm. You're helping me change my point of view when it comes to the exercise, for instance, on the bicycle. It's so grueling for me. The last thing I want to do is work up a sweat for 30 solid minutes, and I'm a little obsessed with the output number. If you're a Peloton rider, you know the output number. And since I've been away, my output number, I'm only just trying to reach, for me, in my particular workout, is a 200 number. My best ever is like 350 or something like that. And the idea of, like, oh, I have to go work out. I will do everything to avoid getting on that bike. Right up until the last minute, when it turns 11 o'clock p.m., I'm like, okay, it's time to get on the bike. Hmm. Okay. And then I'll text somebody. I'll text Derek or Rachel and say, I'm going on the bike. Because if I'm alone, God forbid, and then I get off the bike, I text and say, I'm off the bike. At my age, I have to be worried about these things. So I do always let somebody know that I'm about to go on the bike. But the idea of, not that I'm a bike rider, but to say, just to change your perspective of having it, instead of being a chore, be something that's part of me. Mm-hmm. In whatever way that is. Like I said, I'm not a bike rider. I'm not going to go do the Tour de France. But the idea of just that exercise, that workout, I am somebody that exercises versus somebody that's like, oh, I got to get on that bike. I like that point of view.
He talks about the payoff for habits and stuff too. And I don't remember all the stuff he says about it. But one of the things that I know would not work for me is having a score. If your aim is a score, if you make that score, what do you get out of it? What's the incentive there to actually do the thing that you've set for your goal? When he talks about trying to find other ways to feel like you've actually accomplished the thing that you're trying to get to. Some people that matters a lot too. People like gamified things. For me, that doesn't do it. But
I'll tell you what happens to me. My baseline is usually like, just get on the thing. Yeah. Just get on it. Right, that's usually my baseline because I'm always grueling and this decision maker, and I'm like, let me go do something else, anything but this. Doesn't matter what your score is tonight or anything. And then I get on and I just go. For instance, if you follow the Peloton course with the teacher and you do the warm up and you do the thing, your score is going to be 90. You have to turn it up for yourself. If you do what they tell you to do, they give you a range, and if you're at the top of that range the whole entire time, it's going to be like 150. And which isn't really like a grueling workout for me. So I always want to get more out of it. But I do sometimes think, just get on it. Just go through the paces. Just get on it. Just doesn't matter if you get a score of 20. It doesn't matter. Just get on there. And then when I'm on there, I start comparing. I'm like, oh, here, my score is this. This is my time left. I could certainly get a 200 this workout. And then I start working. So it's always basically a slow start to my engine. When I get on, I'm like, okay, just get on the bike. And I get on the bike. I'm like, I don't care what my score is tonight. It doesn't matter. And then I'm like, oh, wait, I'm doing okay. You know what? Let me go past the – and I always end up going past the pace of the teacher, way past. If the teacher stands – if the instructor stands on the pedals for, I don't know, 30% of the ride, I'm on the pedals for 70% of the ride standing and pumping. But I do take breaks so your heart rate goes up and goes down and stuff. But the point I'm making is it's always so grueling to get started, but once I'm started, then my motor really starts to run. It's like, okay, I'm here now. It's like I'm inside. Just take care of it now that you're
It's that getting started. I think our very first episode was just getting started. There's something there's a switch in your brain where you're like, I don't want to do the thing, I should do the thing. But something happens and you say, you know what, let's just do it. Is there a term for when that switch hits and you just do the thing? And how do you trigger that switch more often?
Yeah, more early.
Yeah, I don't know. I always think of that as like as a hill. Excuse me, as a hill, and it's that switch is the very top. It's there. It's a lot of work to get up to that peak, and then once you get that peak, then you're going downhill the rest of the time. Even if it's still work, you know. I always think of it that way. Is like it's just a matter of getting over that little climb at the top of the roller coaster, and then the whole thing will move after that. But I don't know if there's a term for that.
As far as exercise, Bob, you could probably attest to this or what it's called. But as far as exercise goes, I used to run a lot 15 years ago. I used to run a lot, and I would, for me, a lot, maybe 5 to 10 miles a week. Not, you know, it's not, some people do that every morning. But for me, and then you'd always find that sweet spot. And I do get that on the bicycle when I'm outside of the instructor's pace and I'm just pumping and just going. You get that zone, you know, they call it, you get in the zone, where it's grueling to get to the zone when I'm running, when I used to run. My knees are bad, so I don't run anymore. But when I was running and I get to that spot and then I'm in that zone and I feel like I could just run forever. You can't, but you get in that zone where it's almost like the pushing and the pulling mentally, physically is gone and you're just doing it. As long as you keep your breathing right and you got some water and... I get in that zone sometimes on the bicycle, not as often lately because the mental struggle of getting on it. But I have to find that again, and I will. There's no doubt I will because I'm often looking for it. Once I get past the bump and I'm in, I'm like, okay, you know what? I didn't care about my score tonight. I'm going to try and see if I can achieve a certain thing, at least just for where I'm at right now. I think to myself incrementally, like the score, obviously, as you say, is not super important, but for me, incrementally, it helps me come back if I know that.
Is not important for me. That's all I was saying.
Yeah. But for me, it also helps me be a little bit more goal-oriented, even though I don't want to do it to begin with. But once I'm in it, I'm like, all right, let me just have fun with this.
I stopped keeping track of streaks a long time ago because I find like, oh, if I exercise 60 days in a row, I'm on a good streak, and then you miss one for whatever reason, it's hard to get started again. Yeah. So it's okay for me to miss a day to not do the thing because I'm not keeping track of a streak. This is just a thing that I do. It's a thing that I am, is a better way of saying it.
Yeah.
I talked about that years ago on the podcast. I talked about it with you guys, if you remember, where I do a pattern. It might not be exercise. It could be anything. I do it over and over and over, and then something changes, and then I just never do it again.
Yes.
Like now I'm sitting here at the computer for this podcast, this other computer. I'll never be in my office again for some strange reason. Once my laptop is up and going. But I woke up this morning, and I said, oh, I can't sit at my desk. I got to go to that other room and do the because the computer isn't upgraded. I didn't get my new computer. And yeah, but that's what happened to me. Something like one little glitch in the matrix will change the direction, and I no longer do that ever again. This thing I did for 5 years in a row. Right. I'm like, why didn't, like, it didn't matter that much. Life is so random.
It is. I know Jimmy's got to go soon, and we still have to do some after show.
Yeah.
So we'll go ahead and wrap up. I don't know. I didn't have anything really super fruitful to say around all that stuff. It's just been on my mind. So
no, it's good. It actually helped me. So if the audience got anything out of it, good on you. But I guess
Yeah, I mean, if you're out there listening and you're wanting to try to do something that you don't actually prioritize for yourself, just get somebody else in on it, just to kind of nudge you. I think it's helpful. But well, I'm going to thank our Patreon supporters for supporting us, for being awesome and making the show possible. Big thanks to everybody over there that's, you know, helped us out. Short amount of time, long amount of time, we're really grateful for everyone. These people go above and beyond, like way above and beyond. That's Nick Ryan, Corey Ward, Albers Woodworks, Works by Solo, Chad from Mancrafting, Chad's Custom Creations, Rich at Lewin Design, Odin Leather Goods, Sean Beckner, Scott at Data Yourself DIY, Jeff of the New JK Workshop, Warren Works, Michael Menegin, Crabtree Creative, and people like, let's see, Square Splinter. Square Splinter has been a supporter for a very long time.
That sounds painful.
Almost 4 years now? Awesome. Thank you.
That's too much.
That's a lot. That's but you can get the after show, which is other stuff. I'll give a little tease as to what my what I'm thinking about the office changes, if that matters. But you know, we usually do secret stuff. Jimmy tells us about his TV show situations that never happened.
Non-existent TV show.
All that's in the after show, and everybody on Patreon gets that, regardless of the level of support. So, if you want that, or if you just want to help the show out, you can go to patreon.com/makingit and help us out. And you can also leave comments over there. So if you want to tell Jimmy to not do that anymore, you can leave comments over on Patreon. All right, you guys. I have multiple things to recommend this week.
I have two Instagram things to recommend, and I took screen grabs of them because I'll never remember who they are, or what they are. Let's see. One of them. Wait a minute. Where is one? Okay, one of them is Kyle Norris. Do you guys follow this guy? He has a lot. I thought it said 39. It's 395,000 followers. Kyle Norris. Yeah, I thought it said 39 because I meant to say he needs to have a lot more. He's a guitar player that mimics other. He's obviously an extremely accomplished musician. That's why it's good for you guys to see this. And he does these like little. He'll do a riff of say Dire Straits,
Eddie like Van if Halen. One place and played something else.
Yeah. But he's obviously extremely talented, and it's really funny because he has little banter as if they're all talking to each other, like, what's Eddie Van Halen doing here? And they're all like 30 seconds long. But God, what an amazing guitar player this guy is. And the reason I thought it was so cool is like, you don't really, like, David Gilmour comes into one, and he's wearing all these, he plays every character and wears the iconic uniform, whatever that person's wearing. Like Jimmy Page walks in on one, like what would Jimmy Page look like, but somehow he pulls it off. It's really funny. And the point I'm making is that you don't realize how stylized each one of these people are until you see them in the context of some other highlight.
Right.
Okay, I was just thinking the other day, I'm like, I'm not a Carlos Santana fan, but I can recognize a Carlos Santana lick the moment I hear it. It is so extremely stylized. Yeah. That's the same. Somebody could pick up the same guitar, same amp, same pedal, same tone, maybe same background, and not sound like Carlos Santana. It's crazy of what some people can do.
And then I just sent you a second one. It's his mother, but it's this 6 or 7, 8-year-old kid, just a Jackson thing. And this kid Jackson is a farmer. You guys have seen, he's gotten several viral videos where his mother's asking him about a John Deere tractor. And the kid looks like a 45-year-old man in overalls with his hands in his pockets with a John Deere hat on, telling you everything about a John Deere tractor. The kid is insane.
Huh.
He's so much fun to watch. He's very charming, but he literally, sometimes you say people are reborn in other bodies. The kid is like a 50-year-old farmer born into the body of like a 7-year-old kid. It's unbelievable. You got to watch.
Is this the kid that drives the tractor and like talks on the CB and stuff while he's actually working in the fields?
Not well. Maybe. I've only ever seen him where he's just and like this one video of him. He's just sitting on the tractor talking about this old John Deere as if he built it. It's like he's so...
his legs crossed.
He's so relaxed and chill. And his mother takes him to farm shows. That's awesome. And he walks. It's just incredible. It's just, not only is it entertaining, the kid knows what he's talking about.
That's awesome. Okay, cool. What you got, David?
This is it's a YouTube channel called Tetragrammaton with Rick Rubin. And the particular video that I am suggesting is Rick Rubin interviewing Matthew McConaughey. And it's, man, it is such a good, it's not an interview. It's more of a conversation. It's 2 hours long. And it goes deep into creativity, into what they do. And I know most people are not going to watch this or listen to it, but you should, because it's one of those.
Got it. Okay. How do you spell McConaughey?
It's, I just sent it to you.
In the world.
So you don't have to worry about
I can't for the life of me figure out where I would see an example, but have you guys seen people doing parodies of Rick Rubin? Have you guys seen any of those Instagram posts where guys like...
No.
They kind of, you know, in a friendly way, they kind of like making fun of like everything he says is like dropping knowledge. And
somebody posted on Facebook recently of like this Rick Rubin guy. It was like a very negative post. And then, which I just couldn't understand why they would say something negative about this person, but it's just because that's what happens when you become famous for a certain thing. People are gonna look, and everything about him is it's all about positivity and learning to create and making the world a better place. Like, I can't think of one negative thing to say about him.
Yeah. Cool. Well, mine are one, the latest Casey Neistat video.
Oh,
did you guys watch this?
Oh, the running, congrats to him.
Yeah, I teared up.
He broke his new record? He broke a new record?
He's been trying to break a time record on a marathon for multiple years, and he's run like...
The one from last year was great, too.
Yeah, like a ridiculous number of marathons to do this, and it's such a good video. Like, he's just so good at it. And I keep wanting him not to be as good at it anymore. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you had your time, Casey Neistat. Right, stop being so good at it. But it's so good. And
he's still very good.
The moment at the end of it, I mean, I don't want to give away, but, like, you can hear his wife screaming for him across the finish line.
Oh. That's the crying moment.
And I cried. Yeah. I, like, teared up, like, lumping throat, like, ugh. Man, so good. So that's awesome. I also randomly came across a video last night about the making of Here Comes the Sun, the Beatles song.
Mm. Oh.
And it talks about the recording, and it's a little technical, like there's no video footage, it's a guy talking about the recording process, you know, after the fact, over top of it and everything. But he talks about how that song was written and recorded, and I think it's really interesting talking about the layering. It was like one of the first ones where they used a synthesizer and all this different stuff. It's really cool. But what the things that I didn't realize about that song is that when it came out, it was on Abbey Road on disc 2, and it had terrible reviews. Like, the song was like, this is mediocre. I don't know why they put this song on here, whatever. But it turns out that now it is the most streamed Beatles song by...
Interesting.
Two or three times.
Whoa.
And so they were making the point that it is the gateway song to the Beatles for an entire generation of people, when at the time, the original Beatles fans, some of them at least, were like, that's not Paul, that's not John. You know, it's like, that's the other guy that doesn't write a lot of the songs, even though he's an incredible songwriter and an incredible guitarist.
Who's George Harrison wrote it?
It's George Harrison, yeah.
Oh, he's amazing.
Yeah, so he wrote it and laid down I think all of the guitar. I don't think John was even on it, or maybe not till the end of the recording. But it talks about all that stuff. I don't know, pretty fascinating.
Did he? I'm trying to think. Did he write that guitar riff and present it to the band, and they said no, and then it kind of stuck around?
I don't think it was that one. He wrote it hanging out with Eric Clapton, and then just went in and started recording it. But I think there was another one that they told him no. I don't remember what the which song that was.
Anyway, there's a new Beatles doc coming out real soon, too, called Beatles 64.
Yep. And it looks pretty good. So, anyway, go check those out.
Good picks.
That's all I got. And then that book, Atomic Habits. I'll put a link to it. It's I'm not finished with it yet, but there's already been some really good, actionable stuff in it for me. So.
George Harrison, you guys got anything else? George Harrison died at 58 years old.
So, yeah.
Lung cancer, it says.
All right, cool. Well, thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll catch you next time.
Bye.
Love you. Bye.